Well, first of all, just to add one more thing, for those people who say, well, the U.S. now has Venezuela. That's great. Venezuela's degraded equipment produces about 800,000 barrels a day. And this is of heavy, very, very heavy sour crude. Sour means there's a lot of sulfur in it. You mix that with lighter crude to make a lot of the then refine to make your good diesels. But the point is, it's 800,000 barrels. Maybe if you really stretch the equipment to the breaking point, you get up to 1 million barrels a day. The estimates right now to get them to 2 million barrels is about $100 billion in 3 years. Now, this is partially the fault of Chavez and Maduro and their programs that took a lot of the money out of the industry for social projects and not enough to replace. And partially it's from the U.S. that froze up a lot of funds and then refused to ship equipment in to replace the worn out equipment. It's not damage. It's just simply worn out. So there's no flex there. There's really no flex. Not on a short term. In a medium term, yeah, you know, 3 years you could get it up, but you got to survive those 3 years. There's some flex from the Canadians, obviously, with oil sands. They're going to be vastly profitable now because prices are skyrocketing. But again, they may be able to fix the hole in the U.S. because while the U.S. is a 13 million barrels, U.S. imports oil. It needs more oil. But even the U.S., you're going to get to the point where you have demand destruction, which means simply that prices go up too high. People can't afford to pay the energy costs. The materials that are being produced or products that are being produced get too expensive. People start buying less, and you get a deficit going. Depression or a recession. It could easily fall into a depression. And then you get starvation. And this is another point. Quite literally, Russia produces 40% of the chemical fertilizers in the world. Another 25 to 30% was coming out of where? It was coming out of Qatar. Those facilities have been damaged also. So there's going to be a lag time to get those facilities up and running. And those facilities, by the way, are dependent on the gas flowing. So the gas coming out of the wellheads and coming up and being dry, by the way, you got to dry your gas. Which literally means drying the gas, because when the gas comes out of the ground, it has water vapor, it has various other chemicals coming up into it, has to be cleaned, it has sand in it, you know, just everything is coming out of the ground. It has to be cleaned, filtered, and dried before you can actually use it. So that depends, you know, it's a cascading effect. One fails, the other's going to fail, and systems are linked. Plus, it's very dependent on the wellheads. So you can forget about that for the next couple of years. Well, here's the problem. Southern Europe, it's planting season, ladies and gentlemen. And we have two things. And in another 2 weeks, it'll be Northern Europe planting season. And we have two factors here. Of course, we're talking about right now, we're talking about fertilizer. But you can't spread the fertilizer on a 100,000 acres if you don't have diesel. Because all the trucks run off of diesel, which, by the way, why Russia has a diesel export ban until the end of the planting season to make sure there's enough diesel inside of Russia for all the farmers and at a decent price. Russia will regulate prices and export volumes. They started exporting gas, back in the beginning of January, because there's a ban on the export of petrol before they have to make sure there's enough during the winter season for all the automobiles. Now, I'm sure it'll come back on because there's not enough petrol anywhere to keep the big companies from exporting everything, creating petrol shortages like we had in 2011 before the government started stepping in and regulating the market. So for Europe and not only Africa also and other parts of the world, there's going to be massive problems of getting enough fuel for the tractors and then getting enough fertilizer. American fertilizer itself, you know, and America imports, last year imported $500 million worth of fertilizer out of Russia. I'm sure it'll be up to around $1 billion this year. Fertilizer prices doubled, which of course is 20% of the cost of your crops, by the way. Not just the fertilizer. Getting the crops to market, that's 20% of the cost. And if that doubles, you know, so your increase is going to be about 25%. Or maybe a little bit more. But that's still 5-6% at least increase in the price just for the fertilizer. But it will cascade down because, by the way, you don't have fuel to get it to market. You don't have fuel to get it. You're paying a lot more for that diesel to get it out in the field. And that's if it just doubles. It doesn't quadruple and it doesn't continue increasing because the markets are still not fully reacting to the situation. They're starting to react to the situation. Everybody is on hopium, you know, hope this all ends or on normalcy bias. It'll all be back to normal again. No, it won't. So you may, while I'm not saying there's whole nations in Europe are going to be starving, what you're going to see is actual classes of people starving. The lower classes will be starving. You know, I have a friend of mine. He's a professor of poli-sci in Italy. And I was doing an interview with him a couple months ago, and he was already talking, you know, in the lower classes in Italy, a lot of families can't feed themselves in week three, week four of the month. They just don't have enough money left. And this is before any large price hikes. And when you have large immigrant communities that are being fed by the government, and all of a sudden you have a very large percentage of your population that can't afford to feed itself, and they're looking out, well, why is the government feeding them? That's how you get the social tensions boiling over into open conflict. Not necessarily civil war, but into real open conflict and government problems. So this is going to have a cascading effect. Hungry people are angry. Hungry people are watching their kids starve are very angry people. They're quite willing to spill human blood. That's human nature. It always has been. You know, you can tighten the belt on you, but when you see your children wailing and crying, they're hungry, and you can't do anything to do that. People normally take up the pitchforks, and they take up the torches, and they go to City Hall, and they start burning things. That's been human nature for forever, and it's not going to change. We're going to see a lot of that. What's going to happen in Africa, where, well, Europe can afford to bid up to a certain degree against the Asians for some amount of fuel, Sub-Saharan Africa is absolutely not in that position. They just simply don't have those kind of monetary volumes. There's going to be mass starvation, civil wars, revolutions all across that portion of Africa and other areas. Mm-hmm. So we're in for a hell of a ride.
And of course, there's India too, which is a massive agricultural economy where the people are very dependent on low energy prices and very dependent on fertilizers. Need to import a fertilizer, and India has basically been fairly stable in recent years, but the economy has been growing. It might not be so stable going forward. Is there, let's focus on Europe. Is there anything at all that governments can do in this situation? Because I have been watching the British government. I've been watching the German government. In Britain, they are aware of the problem. I mean, they do understand. I've been listening to, you know, what they've been saying. They don't talk about the fact that there is, you know, that this is really a desperate situation. They're trying to keep people calm and reassured. But they, you can sense that behind the facade of the calm words, there is worry and fear and concern. But I don't see any sign of any kind of plan. In Germany, it's actually worse. There, I get the sense that the German government, at least Merz, the chancellor, he functions in a planet of his own. I don't get the sense that he has any grasp of the situation that's taking place. But let's assume that they all understood that the crisis was coming, that it was really bad, that they had to do something. What realistically could they do? There is some talk now of rationing. I mean, it's starting in Greece. It's been talked about in Britain. Up to this time, nothing has actually been done. There's talk about rolling blackouts, but no visible plan for this. But are these even ultimately ways of addressing the underlying problem if it is as bad as you say?
You know, the easiest thing that these politicians will probably do is to try to clamp down on their societies, absolute police state authoritarianism, dispersing with lethal force if need be any people gatherings and things like that, which will lead eventually to a major backlash because hungry people are angry people and may spiral into a civil war quite often. And that's the thing that route they're going to go, because that's the route that takes the least amount of brain power, planning, and anything else. We'll just push down on the peasants until they can't breathe, and then we'll hold on to power that way. And unfortunately, that's where I think it's going to happen. Realistically, what can be done? Rationing, absolutely. You got no choice on that. Expelling all the immigrants that are there that are not contributing directly, they're feeding mass expulsions because you don't have enough to feed your own people and these immigrants. Sorry, but now you got to put your own house in order. You can't have the guests over anymore because you don't have enough food for your own family. That's the reality that any rational government will do, because the fact that there are immigrants there that aren't working, sitting on welfare, getting fed, is just going to piss your own people off at this point, because the pie just got very, very small. And the people have been lived all their lives there, have paid into that pie all their lives, and are watching their kids go hungry, are going to go, well, why the hell are they getting free food? All right. The problem is, if you start feeding these immigrants, a lot of them will turn to crime, and then you get other issues going. So the best thing is mass deportations. It's not going to happen, but that would be the logical step. Any government that wants to keep its own population, take care of its own native population. And other countries will do that. Europe, I don't see that doing it. What else can they do? Well, luckily, as far as gas goes, 80% of gas doesn't go to the people. It doesn't go to produce heating and electricity. 80% of that gas goes to industry. So we just cut back on industry. Well, the problem, if you cut back on industry, you cut back on people's paychecks. And when food is skyrocketing, as it will be and as already is, people go hungry even faster. Now they don't have jobs. And you get a lot more of your own population that's now listless and very, very angry. So again, you're spiraling back to the same thing. I mean, the best thing is, A, get rid of anybody that's not contributing directly, any freeloaders that are foreign. B, be absolutely honest with your people and look, this is the situation we're in. C, I would say cozy up to Russia, but Russians aren't exactly in the best of mood to be cozied up to by regimes that have been trying to exterminate Russia for the last 4 years actively, screaming how we're going to destroy the Russian economy, we're going to bring Russians to their knees. We've got the fantasy maps of 40 different Russian governments split in the place of Russia and so on and so on. So these politicians, most of them have their bridges burned. I mean, look, Macron's guys try to get in. Ushakov told them what? Pardon my French. Idite nahuy, which quite literally means fuck you in Russian. I mean, this isn't diplomatic talk. This is, you know, they just got told where to go send themselves. And this is from a top position in the Russian government. This isn't some third-rate, fourth-rate politician or some third-rate diplomat. This is from the top of the government telling Macron, go bounce. We don't need you. We don't want you. We don't want to talk to you. And this is the people that are in power. They've burnt their bridges. They've danced on the ashes of those bridges. They made sure they could do everything to destroy those bridges. And now suddenly they're going to, but they're still not even crawling on their knees. They're still trying to dictate. Now you can sell to us, you Russians, which is how it's being interpreted in Russia. Like, yeah, okay, whatever. So from the Russian point. So now what do you have left? You have the U.S., but the U.S. can't supply all of Europe without stripping gas out of the American market. You have Mealy coming out there. I'll supply Europe. Well, the only problem is out of the 5.5 billion cubic feet of gas that he produces every day, 4.8% of the 4.8 billion cubic meters is eaten up by the Argentinian people. So, no, he can't produce. He can't supply Europe. Physically, he can't supply Europe. He can't even cover what Europe lost from Qatar. So all of this becomes a scarcity problem. Just so people understand, drill, drill now is a great motto. But just understand, to bring a new field to economic exploitation levels of economic exploitation, 3 to 5 years. 3 to 5 years from a clear field to your first wildcat wells to actual producing wells, well heads, pumps, piping, and everything else to get that to market. And that's if you don't have to go God only knows where. 3 to 5 years.
What do you think of
the catastrophe is here?
Yeah. What do you think is the prospect of the United States stopping exports of oil and gas? It has happened in the past. I remember when it happened. I'm old enough to remember when Jimmy Carter did it. We had we did a program with Ray Tsukano, who thought that it was a very real possibility that it might happen as soon as the autumn. Of course, if it does happen, then the consequences for Europe are unimaginable. But what do you think are the possibilities of that? And is it true, as several people have told me, that the shale revolution in the United States has anyway run its course, and that it's going to be more and more difficult for the US to maintain production at current levels, let alone increase it over any proximate time period?
Well, the shale revolution has been, the U.S. is actually slightly increasing its oil production as of from 2024 to 2023, like 13.8 million barrels. It's not a huge increase. On the bright side, that shale oil is not going to be profitable for once because prices are going up so much. Most of these companies have actually been working just to survive. They're not making any profits. A lot of them are just losing money, investor money. So that's one side of it. And oil, yeah, the U.S. may block export of oil. Gas, I don't see it as much because the U.S. is still producing a lot more gas than it's consuming. So gas and LNG will probably continue flowing. Oil, not so much so. And yes, it's going to be a disaster. It's going to be an absolute disaster for Europe. Europe could start, the European countries could start a World War III with Russia to try to get the people's attention off of it. But it's still hard to do without fuel. If you buy American equipment, you still got to have some kind of fuel to put into that equipment, diesel primarily. Fuel for the M1 Abrams tanks. But the point is it doesn't solve your biggest issue, the fact that there's just not enough fuel. There's fuel scarcity, fertilizer scarcity, food scarcity, because the Green Revolution was built on artificial fertilizers. And just look at most of these fields, you can count on crops dropping between a fourth to half crop yields without the artificial fertilizers. The chemical fertilizers. It's a disaster. It's a disaster. And the longer that the Europeans keep going, yeah, there's no holes in the Titanic. Everything's fine. Never mind the water levels rising. Just keep playing the band, have a good party, dance along. And meanwhile, they're on Titanic and they just didn't hit the glacier once. They're constantly ramming into that glacier, going back, ramming again, going back. Yeah, we don't need Russian gas. Well, the Russians are evil. Yeah, we're going to continue funding Ukraine for war with Russia. And those Chinese are bastards over there, too, and so on and so on. They're just making the problem even worse. And hoping out that the U.S. will come rescue at its own expense is absolutely futilely stupid. They're not going to ever sacrifice their own country to save Europe. Europe just doesn't matter in the long run for the United States. So I don't know. I don't see anything positive for the vast majority of the European subcontinent. This is a disaster, and they're only going to really feel the full weight of the disaster closer towards summer, especially with a failure in the plowing season planting season. And when the news hits the markets just how bad it is, you're going to see food prices, futures skyrocket. Absolutely skyrocket.
Stanislav, I know what I would do if I was advising any of the leaders of Europe, Merz, Starmer, Macron, whoever, not that they would pay any attention to my advice. I would tell them, Prime Minister, President, Chancellor, for heaven's sake, lift the sanctions on Russia. That's the first thing you need to do. And send some people to Moscow now and negotiate seriously, finally, about ending the war in Ukraine. And the second thing you need to do is to send people to Washington and say to them, there, for heaven's sake, end this war with Iran as soon as possible. I'm going to tell you straight away, I've spoken to people. Nothing like that is happening.
I would suggest learning what the Russian word chelopabitia means. Chelopabitia. And you get on when the servants go in front of the master, they get on their knees, hands and knees, and they beat their head into the floor and go, Oh, great master, please save us, do something. The European politicians need to learn how to do that really, really well. Because they probably may not survive literally, quite literally. I'm not even talking career-wise to the end of this year. Hungry people are very, very mean. Hungry cold people, when winter comes around, there's a Russian saying, "Zima не за горами," winter is not beyond the mountains. You know, kind of like Game of Thrones, winter's coming, and winter's always coming, and winter, and this may be early spring still, but winter is coming, and winter will arrive. And if there's not gas to heat the houses, and you're going to add to starvation freezing, you know, that's a collapse of society. Cold, hungry, angry people are very, very mean. So,
Stanislav, this has been an exceptional program. It's been extremely interesting and explained an awful lot. Thank you again. And I'm sure we'll be doing follow-up programs as this drama unfolds over the next few weeks and months. Thank you again.
Thank you. Trump will definitely go down in the history book.
That's for sure. Stanislav, before you go, once again, where can people follow your work?
Okay, so I'm on X at Stanis Krapivnik. I am on YouTube at Mr. Slavic Man with a K. I am on X. Stas Tudaya Bratna is the Russian channel. Stas Was There is the English channel. And I'm on Substack at Zmei Garenich.
All right.
One of those places. And I'm using Substack as, by the way, a backup for my YouTube, because you just never know.
So. Those links are in the description box down below. Thank you, Stanislav.
Thank you.